The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
Hovering hundreds of miles above Earth is the largest single constellation of satellites. It's called Starlink.
Falcon, Starlink, LD is go for launch.
And there is that call out that we are go for launch. Watch as Falcon 9 takes our stack of Starlink satellites into orbit.
Starlink is part of Elon Musk's company, SpaceX. Its thousands of satellites provide internet all over the world through portable kits about the size of a home computer monitor. The idea is to reach even the hardest to reach places, places where other providers can't operate or don't. On its website, Starlink proclaims that it's available almost everywhere on Earth, and that's a big selling point for the service. But there are some places Starlink isn't supposed to be.
If you look at Starlink's website, they have a very good map of global coverage. They dutifully have certain countries blacked out, or they'll have dates when Starlink services will become available. And some of the countries where it's more controversial, they will have no date available.
That's Alan Crawford, a senior editor at Bloomberg. Some of those blacked out countries he's talking about represent places where Starlink services don't have a licensing agreement, haven't been approved by their governments, or where the devices have been barred for sale because of U.S. sanctions. But a Bloomberg investigation has found that those barriers haven't stopped Starlink's kits from getting into the hands of folks on the ground through a burgeoning black market.
What really struck me was the extent of this issue, that it's not just an isolated case here and there, it's pretty much everywhere.
Today on the show, what Starlink kits seeping into illegal markets could mean for the company, and the geopolitical stakes of letting that market continue or trying to shut it down.
3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition and liftoff.
This is The Big Take from Bloomberg News. I'm Sarah Holder. Alan, can you start by just telling us about Starlink?
Well, Starlink is a system of high-speed internet. It's very dependable, and it's based on satellites. The company has launched over 5,000 satellites, and it's using these to provide high-speed internet in parts of the world where connectivity is not very good, essentially.
SpaceX launched the first Starlink satellites in 2019. In just a few years, it's become the largest satellite network in orbital space. It's also become a major source of revenue for SpaceX, along with government contracts and contracts with other companies to launch their satellites.
The issue here for Starlink is that a lot of countries where they don't have good connectivity are kind of keen to get access to this for obvious reasons. But at the same time, they're not willing to just freely give over control to the company. And this has led to an issue that it's come up in the reporting for this story, that there are many countries around the world where there's no licensing agreement between the government and Starlink. And the trouble is that people are turning to the black market to obtain Starlink devices anyway.
Your reporting found that Starlink terminals have ended up in places that are under U.S. sanctions, where Starlink is barred from operating, or just where Starlink does not have a licensing agreement. Can you give us a brief overview of what your team found is happening?
Yeah, I mean, the Starlink kits, these are the kind of dish and receiver. They're widely advertised over social media, usually, like in WhatsApp groups and Facebook groups. There's countries like Sudan in North Africa, which is subject to US sanctions. There's a brutal civil war underway there, and there have been allegations of genocide. Millions of people have been displaced. And our reporting shows that the rebel forces, which have been accused of committing these human rights abuses, are using Starlink. Because again, this is like a vast country with poor internet systems in parts, but the internet's been brought down and the two sides are, you know, accusing each other of having done that. And in the meantime, they're using Starlink.
What can Starlink itself do about these kits ending up in the wrong hands?
Well, that is really the nub of the matter. We put a set of quite extensive questions to Starlink and they have yet to respond. Nevertheless, people we spoke to who are experts in the industry, who work in the industry, they said that it is feasible to geolocate these systems. As soon as they're activated, you can see where they are. In theory, you flick the switch and you turn it off.
Right. I mean, is that something they've done in the past? They have that capability? Have they used it?
What we were told was that they have moved against illegal use in South Africa. And so the technicalities of how they're doing that, I'm not clear, but they have attempted to clamp down on the illegal use there. But equally, we were told that it hadn't been very successful, that they had only managed to shut down some 10% of the terminals that were in use.
Sudan is just one of the conflict-torn countries where Starlink terminals are being used and where they're banned. It's not just that militias want communications devices. It's also that ordinary people need access to the internet. And that dynamic is not so unique to Sudan. All over the world, in places under crisis, where blackouts and connectivity issues are common, people are trying to get their hands on Starlink kits. You mentioned Sudan, and you got a lot of detail about how Starlink is getting into Sudan and then how it's being used there. Can you walk us through that trajectory?
In terms of Sudan, there are intermediaries who are obviously looking to make money and selling this in the black market, and they're bringing it in from Gulf countries. They're apparently bringing it through Dubai, and there are routes that they go through Darfur and South Sudan and bring them into the country that way. You know, when you buy a Starlink system, you get the physical equipment, and then like a mobile phone, you get a tariff, a plan, and you can pay extra for roaming, and they're using it in these territories where there's no agreement to do so.
So they're buying a kit in a place where Starlink does have a licensing agreement, but they're buying this roaming plan so they can use it in places that are perhaps not under that agreement.
Exactly. The reporter, Simon Marks, he actually caught up with traders and spoke to them in person. And so in terms of social media, these are essentially like small traders that are online that are taking advantage of a loophole or black market to import these devices and sell them at a markup. In some cases, we found they were offering advice on how to shelter these devices so that they're not detected by the authorities, not digitally, but physically. You know, they were giving advice like, don't put it in an obvious part of your roof, you know, keep it to one side and at certain times.
This raises questions about local regulators and their responsibility to catch that these kits have been smuggled in and are being used.
Governments in countries like South Africa, where there is no licensing agreement with Starlink, then they have issued, the telecoms regulator has issued clear warnings against people using this because it's illegal.
Let's talk about the implications of this, especially in a conflict like the Russia-Ukraine war. Starlink can have a massive impact on battlefield communications. What role has Starlink played already in the Ukraine-Russia war?
At the onset of the war, back in February 2022, Elon Musk offered the Starlink system to the Ukrainian government military, which they were obviously more than happy to accept. There was subsequently a deal done between the Pentagon and the Ukrainians, and the terms of that were never made public, but nevertheless, we've seen plentiful evidence that Starlink terminals are used in Ukraine. But what is new is that as of February in this year, the Ukrainians said that Russia is now starting to use it as well, which would be very much against US sanctions. And Musk said on X his social media platform that they were not knowingly selling any terminals to Russia. But nevertheless, there are posts on Twitter of video of Russian soldiers opening Starlink kits. It's impossible to verify these, but the point is that it's a widespread phenomenon.
Finding the technology and shutting it down is one thing, but any attempt to systematically address the problem could mean dealing with the big man at the top. When we come back, how SpaceX's controversial CEO, Elon Musk, factors into any attempts to rein in Starlink's black market boom.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
We're back. Bloomberg senior editor Alan Crawford has been telling me about how Starlink kits have been circulating in countries where the system doesn't have agreements in place. And efforts to rein that in haven't been wholly successful. But there's one person we haven't really talked about much yet who's a big factor, Elon Musk himself. He's the CEO and founder of SpaceX, the private company behind the Starlink satellite system. Here's what Alan had to say about Musk.
Musk is known to weigh in on not just the war in Ukraine caused by Russia's invasion, but on various different aspects of US foreign policy. And that's what gets to some of the concerns that we heard voiced. There's the perception of a potential conflict of interest because Elon Musk is a private sector. He is a supplier of services to the US government, notably NASA. And he's taking these satellite payloads for the US government into space. And so there are obvious national security implications if a company like Starlink were to lose control of a satellite-based system or were even just to exercise, you know, limited patrolling of its own system.
To dig into these possible security risks and the broader question of Musk's role in all of this, I spoke with my colleague Dan Flatley, a national security reporter at Bloomberg who's covered the government contractor relationship between Musk and the U.S.
Musk has a ton of contracts. I mean, there's an argument that could be made that Elon Musk would not be Elon Musk without the U.S. government. I mean, he is, you know, starting in the early 2000s with SpaceX, done lots of contracts with NASA, with other parts of the U.S. government in terms of launching satellites and other types of things into space. He does business with the military. Starlink is being used in Ukraine, but he also has links to the Chinese government through Tesla. So he's sort of has his hands in a lot of different spaces.
How could Starlink terminals bypassing sanctions, for example, cause national security concerns for the U.S. if they're so entangled with Elon Musk's companies?
So, you know, Starlink is both a tool of communication and could be viewed as something that's an asset in terms of national security by the U.S., but it could also be a detriment to U.S. national security, depending on how it's used. And when you have someone who's as unpredictable and mercurial as Elon Musk is, but is also so technically proficient and offers a service that nobody else offers, you're sort of right on the bleeding edge of what could be used for good or what could be used for ill. And I think that what U.S. national security officials that we talk to in Washington, D.C. feel like is that they don't have enough of a sense of where Elon Musk is on any given day on a lot of these issues, that he is both a trusted partner and somebody that that U.S. national security officials are somewhat wary of at the same time. But there's no alternative really to him for a lot of things, especially, again, SpaceX and stuff like Starlink. You know, there's not a lot of other comparable sort of providers out there.
What could it mean for Musk and his companies if they aren't able to address this issue, if it does become more of a priority of the U.S. government to stop this and Starlink isn't able to stop it?
That's a really good question. I think you have to start with the question of, does the U.S. government want to stop this? And it's not totally clear whether they do, because there are some instances where the U.S. government actually wants to encourage the use of Starlink in some countries, whether it's Ukraine or Iran potentially. you know, there is a school of thought that more communication in some of these countries is better because it sort of opens it up to U.S. markets and, you know, sort of the U.S. way of thinking about certain things. I think the question is, are these terminals being used for military operations? Are they being used to coordinate attacks? Are they being used in some way that would represent a significant threat to national security? And at that point, does the government have a vested interest in getting involved? You know, anytime you have a technology like Starlink that is so far advanced compared to what else is available out there, you're going to have people trying to get their hands on it. And that's one of the things that in some cases the U.S. government wants to prevent and in other cases wants to encourage. Take Venezuela, for instance, where Starlink terminals are showing up. Venezuela is under heavy U.S. sanctions, but not every individual in Venezuela is sanctioned. So, you know, if somebody is using a Starlink terminal to access the internet and they're not under sanctions and they're not under export control restrictions, then that's really a question for that country's government. If they are under U.S. Export controls, then that is a question for the U.S. government.
Yeah, it's a really complicated web of responsibility, global interests, and ultimately it comes down to who has the control and who has the will to exert that control, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is not a traditional company. This is not a traditional individual that you're dealing with. I think by any metric, Elon Musk is not your typical, you know, entrepreneur. He's very outspoken. He's very unpredictable. And at the end of the day, the government, the U.S. government in this case, is relying on him for a lot of different things and is not able to exert as much control over his activities as it might in a more traditional relationship.
This is The Big Take from Bloomberg News. I'm Sarah Holder. This episode was produced by Adriana Tapia. It was edited by Aaron Edwards and Shelley Banjo. It was mixed by Veronica Rodriguez. It was fact-checked by Naomi Ng. Our senior producers are Naomi Shaven and Elizabeth Ponso. Nicole Beemsterboer is our executive producer. Sage Bauman is our head of podcasts. Thanks for listening. Please follow and review The Big Take wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps new listeners find the show. We'll be back tomorrow.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.